Welcome to Conversations with the Masters with your host, Master Certified Coach Mary Allen. This special interview series is designed to enlighten and empower you by bringing you the best-selling authors, speakers, and organizations of our time. So get ready to listen not only with your ears and mind, but with your entire being. And now, here's your host, Mary Allen.
Hello, hello. This is Mary Allen, and you are tuning in to the Conversations with the Masters call with Gay and Kathleen Hendricks. Let me just welcome both of you to this Conversations with the Masters call today, and welcome everyone here on the line. My name is Mary Allen, and I'm a professional life coach here now in sunny Southern California. I just recently moved a few weeks ago, and I am your host of the Conversations with the Masters series. I want to just thank everyone for joining in this live conference call today from all across the world and kind of bearing with the entry and exit buttons not working exactly as we wanted. Before I introduce our guest today, I want to really thank all of you that have so graciously spread the word about this call, and I want to specifically acknowledge thinkholistic.com and all of the listeners who are here because of that fantastic online newsletter. And I want to really thank all of you for your commitment to expanding your consciousness, especially in the area of relationships. And I know that you wouldn't be here if there weren't a real soul commitment to that. I also want to let everyone on the call know that the call will be recorded, so you can go back and listen to it again, or you can refer a friend to listen. If you've pre-registered for the call, you will be receiving a follow-up email with information about how you can access this call, and that will be going out later this week. So it will go to everyone that is pre-registered for the call. And also, just this is just a little trivia note, but at the time of this recording, all of the previously recorded Conversations with the Masters calls are now available for download at iTunes. So you get it at iTunes or through my website, which is lifecoachmary.com. So just to introduce, relationships is one of those subjects where I think we can all agree that it's endless learning. And I want to invite all of you that are listening to the call today just to step into a new level of curiosity to learn more about relationships, intimacy, and conscious loving. And I want to challenge everyone on the call listening to walk away with something that you're really, really committed to applying in your life. It might be something brand new that you're hearing from Gay and Katie today, or maybe it's just something that you're really ready to explore on a deeper level. So with that as a little introduction, I want to say it's such a treat today because today we don't just have one master on the call. We have two masters, and I have to say they're two of my very favorite relationship experts and the authors of the very first book I ever read in the area of relationships, your book way back when, Centering in the Art of Intimacy.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, this is a book, the principles of which have continued to just stay alive in my life as I've gone through singlehood and various ups and down types of relationships. Gosh, that goes back well over 10 years ago when I was first introduced to the two of you. So you guys hold such a near and dear place in my heart. I just want to acknowledge both of you are PhDs. And collectively, some of the stats I found that you've supported over 3,500 couples and 20,000 single and divorced people. And I imagine that number just continues to grow.
Yeah.
I guess you draw upon your 24 years of relationship in the work that you do. And I know that you're not just about relationships, that it's really about bringing greater consciousness to every aspect of living. So I'd love just to share a little bit about each of you, and then maybe your partner could maybe add a little bit to that, if you guys would be willing to do that.
Oh, I love that. Adding a little bit to what Gay would say about himself and vice versa, that's really lovely. One of the things that I really like people to know is that I have been interested in the nonverbal aspects of relating and transformation, how to use body wisdom, moving and breathing and communicating for really all of my life. And so when I met Gay at my graduate school, I was not only interested in him as a very incredible person, but also in what he was interested in. And so joining our visions together has made our relationship just a daily joy to me. And when I'm not doing that, I love to garden and take care of our cat Lucy and create beauty all around our home here in Ojai.
Well, and I just have to say, I mean, you're rather modest too, because you're co-author of at least 10 other books, including Conscious Loving and Conscious Heart, both of which I have and love.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, yes. Well, and Gay, what else could you tell us about Katie to kind of add to that introduction?
Well, many, many things. One is that she is an incredible poet. She's published a book of poems that are incredibly moving and deep and beautiful. I actually, just to be around her is the most incredible learning experience every day, because just the way she moves and the way she talks to people, and it doesn't matter if she's, you know, on the phone counseling some VIP or talking to our gardener, she always has exactly the same attitude and way of being with them. And I've never seen her. I've known her now for 27 years, and I've never seen her in a bad mood.
That's pretty darn cool.
It's amazing. You know, I've seen her get angry at something or scared about something or sad about something, but I'm talking about, you know, like being in a bad mood just generally. I've just never seen that in her. And so that in itself would make her stand out and unique in my world. She's an incredible chef. She's made me wake up every day for 27 years feeling like the luckiest man on earth just because I know
her. Aww. How wonderful is that to hear?
Oh, well, I already love this call.
This is a great call, huh? Well, and I just have to say, note all the women in the audience. I've heard this from my husband, and I'm guessing this may be true for Gay as well, that guys really just want to be around a happy woman. And so when you say that she's never in a bad mood, it's like almost the opposite of that is happy. It's like, could be one of the secrets just right there.
Yeah, it's really quite wonderful to behold. So I could go on for a few hours about Katie's remarkable qualities, but I'll pause there.
Okay, so that's good, and we'll take note. There's plenty more to say. And I'll just say a few things about you. And I know you two are an author and co-author of 25 books in the area of conscious relationship, conscious business, and body-mind transformation. And there are several enduring bestsellers: Conscious Loving, The Corporate Mystic, Conscious Breathing, and Conscious Living. And gosh, so and before you founded your own institute, you were professor of counseling for 21 years at the University of Colorado, where you began teaching in 1974 after receiving your doctorate from Stanford. So just a few little things. Somehow I'm guessing that Katie could add to that. Maybe.
Oh, indeed. I think that Gay is unequivocally the most brilliant person that I've ever met. And one of the aspects, and the funniest, and he continues to make me laugh every day. His creativity and vision is so open-ended that he is reliably riding the wave of what is next wanting to happen, not only personally, but really in the collective. He's gotten a direct download of what is really important, and that's part of what led him to found the Spiritual Cinema Circle that makes conscious entertainment available to people in over 80 countries. And I get to experience every day the vision that Gay lives in all of the time. There's an awakeness about Gay that never stops. He is always down at his core, awake and ready to be participating with really letting big waves of energy and creativity and connection move through him. He's also a fantastic networker and has opened up connections between people that it continues to create projects and ideas that are of tremendous value, not only in relationships, but in the way that we interact with each other as humans in all kinds of different ways. Plus, he is the best teacher that I've encountered. He taught me how to play golf, which is not an easy task, by being totally interested in being with me and totally non-critical. And it was such a great service to me because I basically undid a bunch of critical tracks that I had learned growing up, you know, about evaluating my performance. And so being able to be in Gay's presence is an invitation to co-create and to enjoy life that I celebrate every minute of my life.
Wow. How does all that land over there, Gay?
Oh, pretty darn good.
I can see why you guys are teaching relationships. There's certainly a nice mutual fan club going on back and forth, and it's really clear that really you guys are certainly known really as relationship experts, but I know that it really goes so much beyond that in terms of the projects you're involved in, spiritual cinema and the Institute and your seminars and corporate work. And I know you have a new book with Jack Canfield. You've got to read this book. So I know there's so much you're up to. And I could ask you a lot of questions about how you're doing all that. But let's kind of get into what we sort of teased our audience with around getting into, you know, relationships. And so one of the questions just to start off with, and this is an idea that really initially emerged from the first book I read years ago, and just this idea of an enlightened relationship versus an entanglement.
Mm.
So maybe you can just share a little bit about, you know, what does an enlightened relationship really look like?
Well, one thing it really looks like is that people speak authentically with each other. By speaking authentically, you eliminate a large number of the problems that go on in relationship. Like, for example, have you ever had a conversation with someone where you said, what are you feeling right now? Or are you upset about something? And the other person said, no, I'm fine.
Yes.
I remember those constants when I was a kid growing up. It seemed like that was the way people communicated, that you had to dig the truth out of them, you know?
Right.
And so when Katie and I got together, we'd seen umpteen different versions of that, and we didn't want to repeat that, so we made a real commitment to each other to speak authentically to each other and to take that whole digging for the truth thing out of our relationship. And so we made a commitment to speaking honestly to each other. And, you know, it took us a year or two to really get good at that so we could reliably do it. But, you know, it makes such a huge difference, you know, if you say to somebody, what are you feeling right now? And the person says, I'm feeling sad, or I'm feeling angry, or I'm feeling scared, or I'm feeling hungry and tired. You know, if you don't have to guess all the time at what people are feeling, it's such a huge relief to have a relationship where that's not going on all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, so now after all these years, I mean, do either of you even hesitate ever when it comes to expressing a feeling or really sharing the deepest truth?
I would hesitate to say ever, because I don't really have any way of evaluating that, but I cannot recall a time recently of having any hesitation. One of the differences for me in what Gay is talking about that made a huge impact on my life was to initiate, because I definitely was raised that way of don't say anything unpleasant, and if you don't have anything nice to say, just shut up. And so for me, making the choice to initiate saying what was going on for me so that I didn't wait to be asked made a huge difference in the flow of my aliveness and creativity, so that for me, an enlightened relationship is one of transparency, where we're really open to each other and open to learning, open to discovery, and open to sharing. So the choice over and over again for me for many years was choosing to be open and getting interested about what I was discovering, rather than looking at Gay or anybody else as someone who's kind of trying to invade my privacy and dig into something that is going to hurt. It's like looking at my partner as a dental drill rather than as a friend. Mm. And when I started to initiate, here's what I'm noticing, or I had a dream last night, or I'm feeling scared about your leaving tomorrow, or whatever was going on with me, I immediately felt a deeper intimacy with Gay and a deeper connection with myself. And so I think that honesty and openness and a willingness to be open continues to be a door. It isn't as if we've arrived somewhere where we're sort of, truth experts and there's nothing else to discover. There's this whole frontier of discovery that happens from making these commitments that makes relationship really magic.
Mm. The other thing, too, is that in an enlightened or an enlightening relationship, you don't really have blame.
Mm, there's a new concept.
We really looked at that very early on, and we, of course, both been in relationships where there was a lot of criticism and blame, and we'd seen a lot of that growing up. And so we made a commitment to each other to eliminate blame and criticism in our relationship. And, again, it took us a few years to do that, but
How did you do that?
Well, there's really only one way to do it, and that is when things come up, to claim responsibility for them, even if it looks like it's the other person's fault.
Mm.
Oh, boy, but not pointing the finger of blame, but instead going, what can I learn from this, and how am I contributing to this, and what do I really want? That took some practice, because it's so tempting to get that little hit of adrenaline by blaming and being right.
Mm-hmm.
And that addiction, I don't think there's any way out of that except committing to stop it the moment that you notice and instead cultivate wonder and the taking of healthy responsibility.
Mm.
That's a very big issue. And if you can work that one out, your relationships are going to go great, whether it's a relationship at home or with your kids or at work, because chronic criticism is the number one destroyer of intimacy in love relationships. But if you think about business relationships and relationships with kids, criticism and blame play such a huge role in that. And so if you can find a way to eliminate that one thing, you're going to make a huge jump toward being able to have harmony and happiness in your life. It's not an easy thing to do. You really have to make a sincere commitment first to eliminating blame and to learning a new alternative. And then it takes a lot of practice, too. So I don't want to put it out there like it's some kind of a magic spray-on or something like that.
Right.
but if you're
in a situation where it's, I know there's people thinking of, well, but when it's so obvious that somebody, did something or, maybe broke an agreement, or I'm thinking of the situation the other night that we're sort of sleeping with the windows closed for temperature purposes because we're trying to get pregnant, and the acupuncture said to do so, and the window got open, and so it's easy to go. I can think, you didn't close the window the whole way. You did this on purpose. It's like, what would be a way, maybe you can, how would you suggest for other people or myself, how do I not be in a blame or when it feels so obvious.
Yeah. If there's a clearly identified perpetrator, mm-hmm. there's where you can make your biggest breakthroughs. Because, mm-hmm. For example, using that situation, was it you or your husband that left the window open?
Well, I guess, you know, you already got me going down the responsibility path. It's like, I guess I didn't make sure it was totally closed either before I went to bed.
Okay, so, you're
but he
going
was the
down
last
the right
one to touch
already.
The window.
if you were pretending to be the victim in this
yeah.
situation.
He was the last one to touch the window. It's his fault.
Right, okay yeah.
That's where most of us start, yeah. by noticing some place we're identifying ourselves as the victim and the other person as the perpetrator, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's something simple that maybe only happened one time, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a chronic kind of thing, that's where most of us get stuck. You know, like, let's say that this week your husband not only left the window open, he left his socks on the floor, he forgot to turn off the pool when he was filling it so it overflowed, and he messed up your favorite steam iron by putting vinegar in it instead of water, and this was a whole long list of things like that, okay?
Yeah, so what do you do then?
Okay, well, then, let's say that were the case. I doubt if it is, but let's say that were the case. Then what you would want to do is go, what am I up to that attracted that kind of person into my life? And what am I doing that enables him to keep doing that over and over as a pattern? You're not blaming yourself. You're simply looking at the interaction between the two of you. And that's the key thing. And there's no question that people sometimes don't keep their agreements or sometimes don't tell the truth or sometimes mess up in all sorts of big ways. But in a close relationship, what you have to do is eliminate the whole blame thing, because that actually prevents you from learning what's really going on in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what is it that's keeping him leaving his socks on the floor week after week? Well, when we look into that with people, what often happens is they suddenly realize, oh, my God, that's exactly the same thing that went on in my family when I was a kid. So I've got a script that I'm playing out here. And I'm just playing out the dynamics of the script, the parts of the script. And so that's often what comes to light, is a whole lifelong script of things being a certain way. And once you break through that, then there's a possibility of really reinventing something brand new. But you can't really reinvent things brand new if you're still in that mode of blame and criticism. Because what happens is if one person says, doggone it, Tom, you overflowed the pool, you put vinegar in the steam iron, you burned the sheep meat, you did this, the other thing. And then the other person has to respond. Have you ever noticed that when you blame and criticize another person, they don't usually say something like, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
I am
a rotten
human being.
It really is my fault.
It is all my fault. Thank you for pointing that out. What they usually do is come back with a barrage of stuff of their own at you. And then that burns up energy in the relationship that could be used to get down to what the real issues are and could be used then to break through to a new level of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, for me, the single shift that made the most difference was getting curious rather than getting defensive. And I realized that I actually could get curious. I could generate curiosity about what was really going on and wonder about that, regardless of what it looked like. Because it became clear really early on in our relationship and work that not only were we never upset for the reason that we thought, but I've never met a couple where the issue was actually what they thought it was. It always came the actual source of the problem would emerge when people got curious and started to express what they were really feeling and what they were noticing. And making connections out of curiosity would lead to a sense of where they first learned to interact in that way, or what role they were carrying on that maybe didn't even belong to them in the first place. It was something that they saw their parents doing, and they just kept doing it rather than responding in the present with what was really going on. And the thing I have continues to really amaze me and impress me is that if people were not spending all of the time that they do in conflict and power struggles, they'd have an enormous amount of free time and creativity for expressing their contribution in the world and supporting each other's creativity. And, you know, that's where all of our books and seminars and programs in Spiritual Cinema Circle have come from, is because we don't spend any of our time in conflicts and power struggles. So we have an enormous amount mm-hmm. of creativity that we can express. And I really think that's the big issue for people, is what would you be doing with all of your time if you were not involved in this conflict?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, because I think it could be that people maybe are afraid of what to do if there was so much free energy in their world.
Well, also I think that people down underneath, what comes up over and over again in a relationship work, especially because when you get together with someone else, you get more energy together than you have on your own, it tends to bring to the surface anything about yourself that you haven't loved.
Mm-hmm.
And the light of conscious relationship gives you the opportunity to then come into a loving relationship with something that you have tried to hide or you think is just fundamentally flawed about you. And instead of looking at your partner to either fill that need or to make it go away, or seeing that they have the problem, you know, like if it's someone who breaks an agreement, to look at, what is this mirroring to me, and is there something about me that I haven't owned or loved that I can directly come into a loving relationship with? And that loving yourself move is a very magic one to open up a space of support and loving with each other that comes from both people being whole, rather than getting into the relationship to try to get someone to love something that you don't love about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's so true. And by the way, that was one of the other books I love so much, was the book on loving yourself.
Learning to Love Yourself?
Yes, I love that book.
Gay wrote that the first summer that we were together on a series of yellow legal pads with Bic pens.
Oh, my gosh.
That was in the free computer era.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and that, I think as people get conscious, I think they really do get more and more present to and honest with where they don't really love themselves. And I'm curious if what you've seen as far as with people that are clearly in a gridlock type relationship and where they haven't yet stepped into an element of consciousness, like, what do you see really ends up opening people up to getting curious, to even considering that they're not really loving themselves and there's projections going on? What do you see allows people to really cross that threshold?
Well, the word that comes to me right away is willingness, that if a person is willing, then everything else can open up. But that choice to step into willingness and the making a commitment out of your willingness, that is using your willingness to move you forward in a chosen direction, it's that willingness and commitment that can really solve any problem that people have. And, you know, we've seen, I'm sure, every variation of relationship issue that exists, and we've seen all of them be able to be resolved from a moment of willingness and a commitment to resolve the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if people are fundamentally not willing, And I have seen that also, that the person, just when they check in there, they really are not willing. Then trying to chase that down and get a person to be willing is, it's not a very good use of anybody's time.
You're listening to Conversations with the Masters with host Mary Allen. Mary Allen is a pioneer and leader in the coaching industry and author of the life-altering book, The Power of Inner Choice, 12 Weeks to Living a Life You Love, available everywhere. For more information on this and other coaching services designed to enlighten and empower you, visit lifecoachmary.com. And now, back to our conversation with the Masters.
Probably leads into that question. It's like, how do you know when to let go of a relationship?
Yeah, that's a great question. The question of which we hear whenever we do a seminar or give a presentation, that's one of the big questions that comes up. How do you know when to leave? And there are a couple of issues about that I think that are very important for people to know, which is the primarily most relationships are learning relationships. There are a very small percentage of relationships that are what we call toxic relationships, where people who may be just wonderful people on their own, when they get together, they really have a vinegar and oil kind of combination. They're really they literally make each other sick. But that's a very, very small percentage of relationships. Most relationships are learning relationships, where you got into that relationship specifically to learn something that you couldn't learn on your own. And so we really ask people, have you learned what you came here to learn? And how would you know that?
Oh.
How would you know that you really feel complete with your learning? And the other thing that I like to ask people to tune into, and this is something that they need to really do at a body level, is when you tune in to yourself, does the pain outweigh the possibilities?
Mm.
Have you really, is the amount of pain so overshadow the possibilities that you really don't have freedom to learn and to explore and to discover and unwind? When people tune in, they usually get a pretty clear answer about that. If the pain outweighs, and also if they feel that they're complete in their learning. And when people are not complete in their learning, they so often just repeat the same issue in a future relationship, only usually it's accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the issue is, it gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
they go from, picking someone who's got a small addiction to picking a major alcoholic or, someone who empties their bank accounts. And we've had some wild stories about people overlooking another person's addictions and thinking that their love could save them, and that generally it doesn't work very well.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I relate with what you're talking about. I noticed the patterns repeating, and I finally found one of those relationships where I knew if I could just stick this out that I would be free of my pattern, and thank goodness I did. I went, got the learning, and now I'm in the relationship that I am.
Oh, fantastic.
As a result, yeah, but it's so like, okay, I know I can learn it here. I can just stick with it long enough.
There is, I appreciate you saying that there is a, I think in all relationships, there is a something deep that one or both people need to learn in order to move through the doorway into a really co-creative relationship. And it's going to come in, it's always going to come in some surprising way, whether it's your partner having an affair or some sort of family thing or somebody getting sick or, it'll be something that will challenge your basic unconscious pattern and give you an opportunity to really get free and open with each other. So I think it's great that you commit and recommit to learning what you need to learn, and then you get that big reward of living in waves of co-creativity.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely.
I want to let you all know, too, that I'm going to be dropping off the call here in a moment because I'm attending another meeting this afternoon, so I'm only going to be able to be with you for a few more minutes, but I wanted to thank you very much and appreciate what you're doing, and Katie will carry on and handle the rest of it for me, and blessings to all of you and your listeners, and thanks for letting me join you for a little while.
Absolutely. Any final words to add before you go?
Breathe, move, love, and have fun.
Well, thank you, Gay. I so appreciate you being able to be here for even the time that you are here today. Thank you.
Okay, bye now.
All right. So, Katie.
Yeah.
So what other secret ingredients of deeply intimate relationships might we explore for our listeners?
Well, there are a couple of things that occur to me that have been particularly in recent years of tremendous value. One is what I now call leading with gratitude, and it's the practice of appreciation, that really focusing on developing and cultivating and building a true, authentic sense of appreciation both for yourself and for the people in your life that you want to be close to is probably the single most magical thing that you can do. Because most people think that you appreciate by waiting for someone to do something that's really great and then giving them a little pat. But appreciation is, that would be like if I went out to my garden and I looked at my flowers and I said, okay, bloom, and then I'm going to give you some water. It is a kind of a backwards kind of attitude that we have about, you know, kind of a scarcity of love and attention. But if the act of appreciating is something that each of us can actually take charge of. And appreciating, I love the definitions of appreciating. One is to be sensitively aware of. And I think each of us can give that gift to ourselves and to the people that we care about. I sometimes think of it as like being the experience of being with a friend on a porch swing and kind of swinging back and forth and being together, that I can be sensitively aware of something that I notice, maybe an expression on Gay's face or, you know, noticing how he's moving around. I can be sensitively aware of him. And that appreciation directly builds a bridge of intimacy and good feeling. I mean, really lovely, good, deep feeling between us. And that as I focus primarily on the positive, which is the other definition of appreciation, it's not that I'm overlooking anything because I live in a commitment to being honest and transparent, but I'm really giving my attention to what really works and what do I really enjoy and value about Gay, and I'm giving attention to that, and then that grows. You know, his humor and his ability to create visions and his wordsmithing, I deeply appreciate those, and I express those appreciations. And the research is really clear now that if you want a thriving relationship, you need to have a ratio of at least 5 to 1 of appreciations to criticism. So it's something that each of us can really do to not only tip the balance, but to grow a new field in which the relationship occurs. So we're not as much interested these days in problem solving because it's so clear. There's so many problem solving tools. But really in creating a whole new kind of relationship that exists in appreciation and creativity and a mutual respect and transparency with each other. Because I think that co-creativity is a brand new frontier that people really haven't explored very much. We think of creativity as being kind of a solo venture and in some ways being kind of opposite to relationship, you know, that you can either have your creativity or you can have your relationship. But we've really found that when you make these commitments and live in appreciation and honesty and healthy responsibility that you actually do get more creative.
Mm-hmm.
And then life can be about really what wants to happen now. And it's a totally different space. So it's not like you work through the problems and then you get to have a little reward at the end, you know, like eat your vegetables and then you can have dessert. It's really a whole different frontier where you live in a space of wholeness that then creates more wholeness and creativity. It's what we call an Einsteinian move.
Mm.
You know, because Einstein said, among many other wonderful things, that it's impossible to solve a problem in the same state of consciousness in which the problem occurs.
Yes, I love that quote.
Isn't that wonderful? So instead of trying to get a person to stop doing something or to get myself to stop doing something, if I shift my state of consciousness so I'm breathing and moving and loving, I am a different person and my world will occur differently for me.
Mm. Well, so in just talking about appreciation, is there do you try and find a few things each day to appreciate Gay for, or is it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, there's we sometimes call them verbal Valentines, and in our book, Lasting Love, we have a month's menu of appreciations for people to sample, because most of us have, you know, very little education about how to appreciate. What is it? And how would I know I'm doing it?
Right, and am I going to run out of ideas of things to appreciate?
Yeah, am I going to run out of ideas and I'm going to just keep appreciating for the same thing over and over again? So here are a couple of suggestions. You can look at somebody, whether it's a love partner or a close friend or someone at work, and look at them as a work of art. And what is it that's unique about them that you notice that you could feed back to them? Like, for example, I really appreciate the quality of your voice. There's a warmth in the quality of your voice that I find opens my chest particularly. And when I listen to you, I find myself taking a deeper breath.
Mm.
So appreciating something that's unique about someone else, appreciating something that they've done for you, even if it seems like it's really simple. So I appreciated Gay this morning for making coffee. Although Gay's made coffee for me, most every day for many years now, I genuinely was appreciating him doing that in the moment, so I said it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So it matters that you're actually having the experience of appreciating.
Right, and being present to the moment.
And being present in the moment rather than, I really appreciate you making coffee for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like going through the motions. So the really cool thing about appreciating is that if I'm having the experience of appreciating, even if my words are a little awkward, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because the person will get that I'm appreciating. And the other thing that's really wonderful about appreciating is it doesn't matter if you're giving it or receiving it. Everybody gets to feel more love and harmony in the presence of appreciation.
Right. I 100% agree with that. It's fun to dish it out in large doses.
Yeah, and I think actually most people have more trouble receiving it than they do giving it.
Mm-hmm.
So and people can make a commitment. In fact, in our seminars, our couples course, we put a major focus on committing to making a quantum leap in your ability to give and receive appreciations. Because most people are very stingy with themselves in that regard. And when they do open up the faucet of appreciation, both giving and receiving, things get very juicy very fast.
Mm. Well, and that leads to a really good question, too, about, you know, how can we, you know, really discover how to receive more of that love that we're really looking for and discover either what's in the way of it, whether it's receiving love from a partner or just love from a simple appreciation.
I think it's all the same, that all feelings come out of the same faucet. And fortunately, love is really big enough to contain everything else. So, and I think of love, and Gay has talked about this also, is being able to be in the same space as something else.
Mm.
So you can love yourself for not knowing how to love yourself. And the actual act of loving yourself and increasing your capacity for giving and receiving more love, we call that the one problem. That's really what we're all here for, is to right now at this time in history, we have the opportunity to actually mutate our wiring, to open up our actual physiological ability to give and receive more love. What we call the upper limits problem is that we all have a thermostat setting for how much love and appreciation we can actually literally handle.
Mm.
And that most problems that people generate are really a reflection of the upper limits problem, that they've topped out on how much love and appreciation they can handle. I mean, I noticed that I would, you know, I'd be feeling really good, and then I would find, I would notice that Gay looked like he was looking at me sort of critically, and then I would start to feel bad. And I realized that that was actually me topping out my own personal ceiling of how much love I could handle. Some people will top out by, you know, eating something that's not good for them, or overworking,
mm.
or breaking an agreement. But those, I think, are really all reflections of, if you really look at when is it that you create these issues, it's almost always at a time when you've just been feeling good.
This is a great thing to stay present to, of just, okay, you know, maybe this is simply I'm wanting to balance out, gosh, things have been so good and I've been receiving so much that we unconsciously go into these patterns to kind of put the brakes on in a way.
That's totally been our experience, and I invite people to experiment with it, because what we've really found is that almost all issues boil down to this one, which is, When I get stuck, how quickly can I get unstuck, and how many ways do I know to get unstuck? And our books are full of those. But also, how can I notice when I've really exceeded my capacity in this moment, and how can I expand my capacity? So all of our processes that particularly involve breathing and moving and experiential activities are all designed to open up more pathways for being able to receive and being able to communicate more love. So mm-hmm. we have all kinds of breathing activities and movement activities that are specifically designed for people to notice when they've topped out, and for people to be able to, like, open your circulation. You know, people exercise to increase their capillary capacity, and they can also exercise to increase their ability to give and receive more love.
Mm, I love that as a concept, and it starts with that intention, and then it's great that there's structures to actually work with that.
We have all of our books, and our live seminars are basically designed around this one issue, which is being able to recognize that even if you want to move in a direction of more love and closeness, you're going to drift away from that. So
mm-hmm.
when you drift, to not make a big drama out of it and, you know, add judgment to it, but just to go ahead and recognize that and then make a shift. So we call it the drift and shift model. You drift, and then you simply make a shift, and in the shift you return to more ease and flow and harmony, and you increase your capacity to stay in that place longer. And then when you drift, you don't drift as far and you don't drift as deeply, and you make your shifts more quickly. And then people actually, instead of that up-down cycle of feel good and then create an argument and feel bad and then dig your way out of that, and then somebody has an accident and then dig your way out of that, you instead, you expand, and then you integrate.
Mm.
And then you expand some more, and then you integrate. And it doesn't mean that you just are continually in an expansion model. Instead of up-down, you have expand and then integrate by saying something that's true, or by taking a few deep breaths, or by taking some space for yourself to do something that you really love to do. There are all kinds of ways that you can integrate rather than bumping up against each other with a power struggle.
Mm-hmm. Boy, good advice. So in one place, and we'll talk about that here in a few minutes before we wrap up, but one place to do this is take advantage of some of your live seminar trainings, and I understand there's a big summer special. We'll talk about that in just a
minute.
Yeah. Well, one of the other questions we'd kind of pose that we would give an answer to, that there's five questions that can resolve most relationship problems. So I'm curious about what are those five questions?
Oh, well, that's really good. I wonder who sent you that. Gee, five questions. I think we've covered a lot of those questions. One of the questions would be to ask yourself sincerely, am I willing to resolve this?
Mm-hmm.
So the question that I just find really, really useful, the very first one is, am I willing to resolve it? And, of course, you're not going to know how.
Mm-hmm.
If you knew how, you'd already have resolved it.
Exactly.
And then the second one, and these are what we call quantum questions, because they really shift your consciousness in that Einsteinian kind of way we were talking about. One incredibly useful question is, how is this familiar?
Oh, that's a great one.
So the how is this familiar takes the filter off of your partner and really brings it into a very useful kind of noticing the connections between things. And sometimes just asking that, how is that familiar, begins to loosen up the log jam of, thinking that it's your partner's fault. And then another question is, what can I say about this that is unarguable right now? And it might be a feeling, it might be a thought that just came up for you, but the moment that you say something unarguable, you open up a tremendous flow of creativity and energy and vitality in you that returns you to your wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
And from that wholeness, all kinds of solutions to the actual problem occur. But, even more than that, you're experiencing yourself as a whole person rather than as a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then another question that I find really incredibly valuable is, what do I really want?
I love that question.
Very few people really ask themselves that. They're really looking at, first I'll solve the problem, and then if I have any energy left, I'll take a look at what I might want. So for example, people might start with, I'd like to have less conflict,
mm-hmm.
which is a great place to start, but not a really good place to land. From that, I would ask, if the conflict were resolved, then what do you really want? And then very often it's something like, what I really want is to be spending more time with my own art and not lose contact with you.
Mm.
Or what I really want is to have us do more things together free of the children for at least, once a week.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find something that's specific that when you land on it really makes you light up. So asking what you really want is really incredibly useful.
Mm.
And did I give you five? I'm not sure.
I counted four on that. You got another good one on you? There's way more than five.
There's way more than five. But
these are so good, though.
That are very useful are these quantum questions that really allow people to move into the expression of their true creativity. And for me, the most important one, that no matter what kind of process I'm working with people on, I always ask them, what's the simplest step that you could take now that would start moving you in the direction of what you really want?
Mm.
And because very often people put a big mountain in front of themselves and then collapse and say, I can't possibly do it. But if they look at what's the simplest action step, it could be writing something down. It could be making a phone call. It could be kissing your hand and saying, I love you. But it'll be measurable and simple, and it begins moving people in a new direction.
Oh, these are so good. So where can people find these quantum questions?
Oh, well, they can find the quantum questions in any of our seminars and in our book, At the Speed of Life, which has discussion of really body-centered transformation and how each of us can really use body wisdom to create well-being. And I think all of our books really address one aspect or another of what each of us can do on a daily basis that will really make a difference in living in a state of wholeness and co-creativity. And in our trainings this summer that are coming up in July, we have, since this is our 25th anniversary year, we've decided to celebrate all year by offering people different gifts. And the big one this year is that people can come to our Foundation seminar, which is a three-day experiential extravaganza of happy learning, and to our five-day relationship intensive, where people can really immerse themselves in the kinds of experiences and processes that we've been talking about today, and they can do both of those for the price of one.
Which is so phenomenal. I mean that's a huge savings. And I'm going to be emailing out information, so if people want to take advantage of these special, I mean, it's basically 3 days plus 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about total immersion. This is all in July,
yes.
So you can go back to back and just really immerse yourself in so many of the principles that we've just been scratching the surface on. So I will definitely make sure that people have a way to contact and register, take advantage, because the starts July 20th will be the first one. So that is a great program.
Yeah, and the thing I want everybody to know, too, is that I am totally convinced that people don't really learn in any significant way unless they're having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And so our seminars are all based on how can you learn what you need to learn and want to learn while having a good time. And so it makes for a very engaging and dynamic learning environment.
So it's very experiential.
Yeah.
It's not like they're just going to be sitting in a place lectured. They're actually going to be putting the stuff into action.
Right. In fact, we really warn people about this because it's not for everybody. That, you know, if you're used to being, you know, opening up the top of your head and having things poured in, this could be a new learning challenge for you. But what we find is that once people just say, okay, I'm willing to learn while having a good time, they actually do, and they have some deep, profound learning without suffering.
Mm. Well, I'm thrilled that you guys are so committed to the work that you're doing, and it's so clear too that you both really, really walk your talk. That's evident in reading stories from your book and just really hearing from you. And I think that's, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, go do this in relationship, but you guys are really, really doing it. And so what better models to learn from than two people that really are doing the work that they're teaching other people to do?
Well, thank you. Well, we want to we don't think it would be in integrity to be telling people about things that we're not practicing. So,
yeah.
You know, we've benefited from them so much that it's really a pure joy to share those discoveries with others.
Mm-hmm. Well, any other, and let me just address too, because I know that there's also single people that are listening in. Is there anything else that you can add that would speak directly to singles?
Well, yeah, thank you so much for mentioning that, Mary, because we have written a book fairly recently called Attracting Genuine Love, which I highly recommend to people. It really has the fundamental processes and attitudes that are going to open up a space for you to attract the love that you want. And it's really based on truly learning how to love yourself. And so the book has a CD that's attached to it. And the one recommendation that I would make to everyone, but particularly to single people, is to practice loving yourself. And to look for those places in you that you think are unlovable, and to learn to love those, and then you will attract someone who loves themselves.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. I think that's excellent advice, because we do attract the reciprocal of our relationship with ourselves.
Indeed. Indeed.
And it becomes very evident at certain times of our lives. Well, gosh, I could go on and on, and I would love to ask you dozens more questions, but we're at top of the hour, and I know that all of our listeners just want to offer just a huge, gracious thank you. So we're sending you and Gay both big virtual hugs from all of our listeners. And I'm going to just open up any other final comments just to before we open up the lines, and you can be showered in a few words of appreciation from.
Well, I appreciate very much the opportunity that you and that technology has given us to be able to join together and share a commitment to conscious loving as fellow humans, and because I really think that learning in community is really what we are moving into and what we all need to learn, and so I celebrate that that's what you're doing and that's where you're living.
Well, thank you so much. I love that we can all come together in this format, and maybe at some point down the road we'll have you back again and discover some more layers together.
I would love that. It would be my pleasure.
All right.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Conversations with the Masters with your host, Mary Allen. If you would like to participate in upcoming live conference call interviews, visit www.lifecoachmary.com. Transcripts and audio of previous interviews with such masters as Wayne Dyer, Carolyn Mace, Debbie Ford, Byron Katie, and others are available on iTunes or at www.lifecoachmary.com. For more information on the work of Mary Allen, her upcoming Success and Inner Peace Boot Camp, or to sign up for her free online newsletter, Soulfully Living, and to receive inspiring daily quotes, visit lifecoachmary.com. Thank you for being committed to your own personal and spiritual development, and thank you for spreading the word about the Conversations with the Masters series. We wish you a fabulous day.